Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Langer, and this week I am joined by not Sam Roberts, but Carly McKinging, who is the Head of Communications for Rugby Americas North. Carly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Happy to be here.
Well, we've actually met in person, Carly. We played touch rugby in Seattle for about 3 hours in one of the rare hot days that Seattle gets a couple of Junes ago. You were incredibly good, and you've played a kind of a high level in the US. You're also someone who's obviously involved in kind of the administration of the game. You were previously with the Seattle Seawolves in MLR. So you're someone who's been involved in the game at a high level. Just to kind of start us off, how did you get into rugby, and what does that look like as a young person in the US trying to get into rugby?
Yeah, so I think like most Americans, and I hope that that's a statement we get to retire here in the next 5 to 10 years, but like most Americans, I found rugby pretty late in life. I know in the UK, I think it's like secondary is like your high school. So I was a senior in high school, so 18 years old. And I had a friend come up to me and ask me to come to a practice, come to a rugby practice. And I played soccer from the age of 5 all the way up to 18, you know, big Mia Hamm fan, big David Beckham fan. I wanted to be like my brother and play soccer. And so I did do that, but definitely like lost its luster in high school, and it got pretty expensive and just inaccessible, I think is the right word. And so when that opportunity came up, I always wanted to play American football. So I was like, oh, this is like as close as I'm going to get being a girl. So I went to a training. There's a lot of club teams here in the state of Washington. Some states are single school, like I know Colorado is single school. But most states, I think, have a club model. So as long as you can get to training, just like adult club rugby, you can be on the team. So I rocked up to the Kent Crusaders, which is actually the first high school girls team in the U.S., started in 1991, and immediately fell in love with the game. So there are youth teams now that you could start playing at like the age of like 5 or 6 in the greater Seattle area. And in Washington and Oregon and other states. But I think most kids find it in high school once a buddy is kind of like, hey, come play with me. And that's a direct result, though, only of you having a good time. So that's kind of the key is you've got to make sure that the kiddos are having a good time, because then they'll bring their friends along. So because it is a very competitive landscape from a sports standpoint here in the U.S.
One of the things I'm fascinated by is kind of what the experience of playing and competing in the US looks like. I remember moaning about kind of 2-hour coach journeys that we would have in the UK and playing up in Suffolk on Norfolk from the UK. And then when I spoke to you, I kind of stopped moaning about that, because just talk us through kind of what the travel looks like and what your games look like, I guess.
Yeah, so playing for Kent, I know my first like big road trip in high school is we drove down to Portland, Oregon, which is about 3 hours one way on a Thursday. So like on a school night, we went down and played a really competitive side out of Oregon. But then as you get into university side, so I went to Washington State University, and it's over by Idaho, you know, and we play University of Washington here in Seattle. It's a 5 hours away match and then 5 hours back. Then you get to regionals. I remember we took the train 20 hours one way to Stanford to play in a national championship, because can't afford any other route really. So, you know, from a university standpoint, that's an issue. And then as an adult playing for Seattle Rugby Club, we actually elect to play in the BCRU and play up in Canada because of the quality of rugby. But that means if we're driving up to Capilano's, it's 2.5 hours one way, play 80 minutes of really good rugby, actually get to access the clubhouse, which is really cool for a lot of the American players, and then drive home. So it's definitely cheaper than a flight, but still like it is your whole Saturday. So it is a big commitment if you really want to kind of climb and develop. So I haven't had a proper summer, I don't think ever.
Well, the Pacific Northwest, so I guess if you're back home in the UK, that would be Washington, where Seattle is. It would be Oregon just to the south of that. I guess Idaho to the east, and then British Columbia, then Canada to the I guess southwest of Canada, but north of Seattle. That is, at least seems to be a real hotbed of rugby. The Seattle Saracens were there before the Seawolves. The Seawolves have always been really successful. Rugby Canada has their kind of headquarters on Vancouver Island, I believe, which is off west of Vancouver. I guess in that sense, it's maybe one of the easier places to play in the US because there does seem to be this hotspot of rugby.
Yeah, and I think there's like a three big factors there. One, we are like a big business tech, you know, Google, Amazon. We get a lot of expats. We get a lot of folks from all over the world. We do have a really, really healthy Polynesian community, which has been great because as a young player, I learned how to tackle a lot of bigger and stronger and steppier athletes that then prepped me for later in my career versus a lot of folks maybe like in the middle of the country aren't getting, you know, they're not playing at a diverse player pool. And on top of that, our weather is actually not as bad as everyone thinks. Like, yeah, it does rain here. And it's, and as someone who's lived here, you know yourself that it's just more gray than anything. So we can actually play rugby year round. So like straight out of college, playing for Seattle Rugby Club, also known as the Seattle Saracens for a bit. I played 18 games in fall and spring, which is like a healthy season. And my first year out, we lost every single game, but I learned how to ruck and I learned a lot. And I saw girls who were smaller than me just blowing people up at the ruck and in contact. And it was really, really enlightening and inspiring. So I think the weather and our proximity, helps a lot, as well as the player, you know, population and kind of the demographic we have, I would say too, on the West Coast in general. I think California could be wrong post pandemic, but I think California has the most sipped athletes for rugby in the US, so registered players.
I guess California and I guess the East Coast kind of New England way has got a similar setup in terms of quite a few expats and obviously quite a lot of cash, which is important for growing the game and for successful.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. And I think another thing that's been helpful here in Seattle is we do have that full pipeline, having the youth all the way for boys and girls, all the way to pretty much every university here has rugby, whether it's club or I believe I want to say like 2013, 2014, Central Washington University became a varsity program. It's kind of in the middle of the state and they offer scholarships for men and women. So we started getting like kids like from England, kids from New Zealand, you know, the local talent here got to go play at a varsity program and do the college, you know, student athlete thing that a lot of us grow up wanting to do, all the way to having a lot of like club adult options once you graduate, which is really unique for American sport. Like if you don't make the NWSL or the national team for women's soccer, like you kind of just play a beer league on Tuesday. And like, even then, you get folks with different goals and that can kind of lose its fun after a while. And then you add the top tier most recently with the Seattle Seawolves and Major League Rugby. And granted, that's not a full gender parity, but I think we're one of the states that's pretty close to that. I know Colorado's kind of similar in that sense. So there's just rugby at every level wherever like folks get introduced, there's an opportunity to kind of show up. And as you saw with our Sunday touch, you know, we, every Sunday from 10 to or 11 to 1, it's like ages 14 to like 70. And I've been going out and doing that since I had like 2012. And there's like three women to start. And now there's a ton of like University of Washington athletes and like there's folks from all over. And that's a really like useful way for people who do move here for a job. They get stuck in, they search Seattle Touch Rugby, they search Seattle Rugby. And I field a lot of those digital communications on social platforms for the local clubs and try and make sure that folks get stuck in pretty quick. Because as someone who's never left my own city, I know I can't even imagine making new friends in another state. I'm sure it's doable, but I'm happy to help facilitate that through rugby however I can.
Yeah, it was a really wonderful opportunity as well, because I think there was maybe 24, 25 people when I signed up to play. And even after that, we hung around and kind of kicked a soccer ball around. And I think some people went for drinks and that. So it was kind of, it did feel like an amazing way to make friends if you were new to the city. Because it's just, as you say, it is really hard. And I think you need that opportunity that rugby can give you.
for sure.
So I want to talk about the sevens, obviously the bronze medal for the women in Paris. We've been talking for years about the sleeping giant and US Rugby being, as soon as US Rugby kind of gets his act together, then it will take over the world, and how important World Rugby sees the US, because obviously vast amounts of money, a massive interest in sport, huge population. From the outsider's perspective, I would say that if the US is a sleeping giant, before the Olympics, it was more asleep than it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Is that unfair, would you say, Carly?
Yeah, so I think that's an expression I definitely, I feel like I've been hearing since like at least like 2011. I didn't really even know about adult rugby until 2012. And I was very fortunate to work for Serevi Rugby, formerly known as Atavis Rugby, and a company with a lot of the Ben Gallings, Emily Bidewell in her early coaching days, Sean Pittman, Shalom Sunila, Matt Turner, just a lot of really talented rugby minds as a young kid. I had no idea who I was in the room with. But that's all we heard. And that was kind of the business model, is let's start doing camps. Let's do youth camps. Let's be an arm of USA Rugby to help with development. And super, super impactful. I think that was a really good approach. But I think that sleeping giant tone was definitely attached to the men's national team for a long time, mainly 15s, because no one really cared about sevens in the early 2010s. And so there was just a lot of focus, and there just has been, about like these male players who don't make the NFL or don't get a college scholarship are going to just immediately come play rugby. And I 100% thought that as well. But as I've started to learn more about how business works in sports, and how these opportunities work and pathways in rugby and in other sports, that's just not a guarantee that people are going to transition over that easily. So I think there's definitely some ebbs and flows and some different, initiatives that have started over the course of the years, both in like media rights and, bring the All Blacks to come, beat USA 93-5 or whatever it was at the Chicago Bears Stadium back in 2014, and stuff like that. So I think there was these like spurts and injections of opportunity, but Americans don't really understand what a national team is unless it is every 4 years. So I think the women's soccer team actually added a lot of clout to what it means to represent your country, because people care more about the Seattle Seahawks than they do Team USA. Because quite frankly, one plays every week and one doesn't. So it's a lot easier to be a fan for your pro team in town than it is for your country, which is so silly to say as an American, because everyone will say like, we're so patriotic, almost to an obnoxious point. And like, that seems like it would be such an easy segue, but for some reason it didn't stick. And so, I think the more opportunities that we've gotten to put rugby on TV, that's really been helpful. So like Peacock and going to mainstream commercial opportunities. But I had no idea, even as someone is stuck into the game and whatnot, I had no idea. I knew this team could medal, and I had no idea what it was going to do. I mean, I'm still kind of like, wow, my job just got so much easier. The amount of people that stopped me wearing a rugby shirt, just in the last 3 weeks has tripled. Folks that just hear the word rugby, they're like, how about that? How about the women's team? How about that medal? Stuff like that. So, my team, we were at Club Sevens in Madison, Wisconsin, and some of the girls were walking around Target, and I think they recruited somebody's daughter, because they were like, yeah, she wants to do flag football, but we saw the rugby team. And then like, she got to see some rugby players, and now they're going to go look for rugby. So like, it's just, that like hand-to-hand, combat, which is exactly how I got recruited. It's now a part of the conversation, and it's a narrative that I hope stays. And it's the perfect time with women's sports being as investable, as it is. And that uptick. So, my big joke or my big thing now is like, oh, yeah, there was a giant, but it turns out it was a she all along.
Yeah, that's. So, I mean, that,
we
that's
thought one it was the a guy.
I think that's one of the fantastic things, because there are two stories, I think, in US rugby. You can look at the 15s teams, which to a certain extent, the men have declined more than the women, but I think there's been a decline for the women as well. But sevens has filled the gap. And obviously the bronze medal, Ilona Meyer getting whatever it was, 2 million more followers during the Olympics.
She's got more than everybody now. All Blacks World Rugby. Yeah. She's the most followed rugby thing out there now.
Yeah. And I guess from your perspective, obviously a lot of what you do is on social media. How does that convert to putting more people on the seat in seats in, say, the Seawolves in your former life, and more people on the rugby pitch in your current life? Like, how do those things actually pass through to reality?
Yeah, so I think marketing is all like kind of a push pull, and I also think I compare marketing a lot to rugby. It's recruitment and retention. So you've got to bring folks in, but then once they're in, you still got to keep them, right? So your senior player who's been playing for 10 years, you still got to make it valuable for them to show up to trainings every Tuesday, just like you do for the new player. So there's multiple prong effects that you have to kind of attack things with. And right now, I've seen the data and the Google search uptick for rugby is just absolutely insane. And I know some of the handles that I have access to, getting a lot of folks like, hi, I'm 45, but I want to give rugby a try. Can I come to your team? And I'm I actually teared up when I read that message, because I'm like, you just inspired somebody who, like, from a demographic standpoint, probably needs rugby the most or needs an opportunity like this and grew up without it and is brave enough to reach out and inspired enough to reach out to try and get involved in the game. And I think one of the main things that we have to get away from is that we don't just need players. Like, yeah, we need players, and we Lord knows we need more refs and coaches who want to also develop and get better, but we need just more people. We need fans, we need admin, we need photographers. I made sure to go onto a couple accounts and look at comments, like just when I had some free time as me, and somebody was like, when is the USA Sevens tour coming to Portland? And so I went in and I was like, hey, like, here's some local team. Here's a photographer. Like, I'm talking like Nike goes to the Nike track and field, 6,000 followers, very, very talented photographer. Tagged Portland, told him to check out Vancouver Sevens or LA. He followed me. I followed him. And for my job, I need those type of people. I hire those type of people. So not only, will he maybe bring rugby to his track and field followership, maybe I just found an opportunity to bring him in and give him an opportunity to, from a business front too. So I think right now we just have to be really active. I'd say I don't know, at least through the end of the year, like if people have accounts, make sure, I know people have posted this, but I'll reiterate, make sure your website's up to date, make sure your contacts are up to date, check your requests on Instagram, on Twitter, and all that good stuff. Cause people are out there looking for it for, I would argue, the first time ever in the US.
Yeah. One of the things, I think it might have been Sam Love who posted this, but it was on the spike in Google searches, and there was, there was spikes in 2015, there were spikes in 2019 for the two men's World Cups. There's one in 2023, but the spike during the Olympics, kind of during Antoine Dupont and the men's sevens, it got kind of maybe three times higher than it's ever been. For the women's, it was maybe 50% higher than that again. So this is unprecedented. This is not just, during World Cups where maybe people are a bit more aware. This is a huge opportunity for them in the US.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think it's something we honestly weren't even prepared for. I know the sevens series dates are hopefully coming out later this week. And that was even something that World Rugby was, oh, hey, we got to capitalize on this and stuff, which is not a bad thing for us to be surprised, but it's a bad thing if we don't react and be proactive now that we know what's in front of us. That's where rugby will take an L, is if we don't capitalize on this. And effort, it doesn't need to be, spend your entire week scouring comments or anything like that. It's just go do a little bit, clean up your profile, stuff like that. Social media and outreach and recruiting is very much like some is better than none. So don't feel like you need to go hire somebody. I mean, please do if you can, but yeah.
Yeah. So I want to just maybe take a couple of steps back. You mentioned earlier the US against New Zealand in
2014 or 2015. Yeah. It was at least the first one. Yeah.
So I believe that was that and still is the most watched game of rugby in the US. Something like 72,000 or around that kind of people who watched it. And as you say, it was a pretty bad loss for the US. One of the things I see from people I follow, maybe who are from Portugal or are big Portuguese rugby fans, or maybe kind of Romanian rugby fans, is that they want or they feel it will massively boost their national team and rugby in their country if they can get a big team like the All Blacks to come and play in their country, regardless of what the result is. On the other hand, I've also heard a lot of conversation in the US that the US hates losing. And the idea of getting the All Blacks there and getting absolutely destroyed is not actually that helpful. Where would you stand in that debate?
Yeah, so I think back in 2014 and 2015, when rugby, live rugby on US soil was not as accessible, that's what drew that crowd. And it's a football stadium. Like, it was November. I was in the press box, but like, it was the coldest I've ever been in my whole life. Like, it was not like a fun place to be in the sense of like weather, and folks still showed up. So that is that draw. Sonny B. Williams was still playing for the team at the time. So I think there's a little bit of that versus like now, you know, you could go see pro rugby, you know, every week if you're in an MLR town or a couple states away. And so, you know, San Diego just hosted Fiji versus All Blacks at Snapdragon Stadium on July 19th, I believe it was, a Friday night. And it wasn't that full, like, to be candid. And it's two heavy hitters. Like, Fiji performed very well in the Men's Rugby World Cup. They were one of my favorite teams to watch, you know, in a 15s format now. And, you know, it's still... And going back to that, like the West Coast, a lot of Polynesian community rugby players, and it still wasn't that full. And so I'm wondering if, you know, the fact that we can go see rugby every week now does make it less special. And because it was the same team in the grand scheme of things, like, you know, Caleb Clark was playing, it was a proper All Blacks side. Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough one to crack. And I agree that like going and watching your home nation lose on home soil is pretty un-American. And so folks might have like a, you know, not an appetite for that. So I think the solution for that, though, is we have to start building up more of these characters. Like we've seen the success with Alona Mar. I know Alex Spiff Cedric, who scored the game winner, not a big attention gal, but like she went from like 7,000 followers to like 38.8 and like, she's not even actively trying or uses it as a form of income the way that Alona has been able to with through sponsorship and stuff. And so I think if we can start building more of these characters and getting people to follow, then, you know, it won't matter whether we win or lose, because at the end of the day, someone's got to win or lose. So what's something consistent that we can sell as a product? And I think building up our people and our poster boys and girls would be like the next big thing that I think we need to do heading into the next hosting World Cups, LA 2028, and then two World Cups and 31 and 33. Like, we got to give reasons, you know, for folks to show up, knowing that we are going to play the Black Ferns. We are going to play the Red Roses. So yeah, I'm really actually excited to see how the WXV matches go, because the WXV One events are going to be happening in BC, and I'm hoping that the silver medal performance from the Canada Women's Sevens team will also help bolster that, because it's going to be some good France, Ireland, England, USA, Canada. I'm personally trying to find a Saturday that I can, you know, take my normal away match energy and put that into a drive to go see two women's, you know, test matches and then go home. So
it's amazing what you say there, because we really don't have characters in rugby. Like, if you, you know, when you're embedded in it and you're kind of a rugby nerd and you know the names of those people, it, you can imagine that as everyone else does as well. But if you kind of, if you just ask someone who's not involved in the game to name even five players, most of the time when I've done that, it's maybe two. And some of them are old. Like, some of them are, you know, Johnny Wilkinson, who hasn't played for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so we really do have a lack of big names in the sport. And it's hard because one of the things that teams can do is they can, you know, recruit talent. They can recruit a big name. But in rugby, if you, you can spend loads of money and you can recruit someone who maybe is a massive name, but you're not going to get beyond your local rugby community because they're just not a massive name in the grand scheme of things.
Right. Yeah.
100%. Is there a way to fix that? Like, is there a, is it this kind of social media? Is that the way that you, you get those names out there?
Yeah, I think so. Because to be honest, during my time with the Seattle Seawolves, I feel like I spent the first 3 years. And then like for all like your sport history buffs out there, Seattle Seawolves were the first pro team in Seattle to win back-to-back titles in their respective leagues. So even though the Seahawks had a very, like a double Super Bowl run in the early 2010s, the Seattle Storm, the WNBA team, has won multiple titles. The Sounders have been wildly successful. The Reign have been successful. No one's gone back-to-back. And like just getting the score in the weekly paper was an uphill battle. Even though I was sending them everything, I'm sending it to the sports desk. I'm following the, you know, the traditional PR route, and doing what the editors asked me to do, and it still wasn't landing. And it was quite frustrating. So, you know, you could spend a lot of time spinning your wheels trying to get people to care like that. You know, or because we do have social media now, I would argue people's like best route is like, if we don't talk about it, like if rugby doesn't do a good job talking about rugby, why would anyone else care?
Yeah.
And so like really, really champion your channels, your stories, your narratives, you know, what are the community things? Do you have folks who are military? Do you have folks who are involved in other things that you can then, you know, that's much easier for like, hey, you should write about Carly, or, you know, because she's a WSU alumni, you know, your university and stuff like that. So, you know, that reminds me, maybe I should reach out and be like, hey guys, I'm working for a governing body that oversees, you know, rugby and like a huge continent, basically. That'd be really cool for my sport management program to showcase the other pathways that rugby has, because I think that's what sets rugby apart, is this level of opportunity that doesn't ever, you don't age out of. You know, I've done more traveling as someone, like I said, who's been rooted in Seattle, Washington and Washington State my whole life. I've done more traveling in the last 5 years because of rugby than and I ever imagined, and I have more to come. I get to go to Trinidad in November for the RAN Sevens. Hopefully I get to go to London in October for a World Rugby Marketing like summit, where when I used to want to work for the NFL, NFL UK, we might go to a game. And like, you know, so all of a sudden you take this other path, and then eventually it's gonna kind of circle back, and folks will start caring. So I think, you know, beat your own drum until maybe you pick up some other folks and they'll pick up their drum too.
I think that's a massive message for rugby in the UK, because I think because rugby as a kid, it's not hard to play rugby in the UK. You know, there's often too many clubs. There's one kind of within 20 minutes pretty much of every single kid. And when you do go there, you'll play games within 20 minutes of that club. So it is very easy. And I think sometimes it can be very simple to become complacent and think that we'll always have rugby and it'll always keep growing. But in the US, it's the opposite. You know, you have to work so hard to get there. It's easy to be enthusiastic about the future and get more people in. Whereas I think the UK, some clubs really don't want other people to join. You know, they really want to kind of keep as they are, and then they're shocked when they start to die.
Yeah. And we do have some of that. There's this, the old guard and folks who did really work. I mean, like, this is our trailblazers, right? They countless of hours of the folks who founded these clubs who've been around for 50 or 60 years. But I think they are like, it was so much work and so much effort that they like want to hold on to things instead of kind of opening up to like how we need to do things moving forward. And, obviously I think that's the other thing with rugby, is like every demographic and stakeholder is really important, and like obviously balancing everyone's needs and wants is tough, but You know, I've ran into a lot of folks on like the women's side of things who are like, oh, like I've met teams who like, we don't want men on our board. And I was like, why would you do that? Like, that's the opposite. Like, you're going full send the other way on the inclusivity thing. And I'm like, we need allies. Some of the most important people who've stood up for me in rooms are men. So I'm like, this is not a you versus me or women's versus men's rugby. Like, this moment for women's rugby with the USA Women's 17, that's going to help men's rugby. It's going to help rugby in general. And it just helps that women's sport is like climbing the ranks across all sports right now. But like, with the women's success is going to help the men's program. And it's hopefully going to wake up other teams to be like, hey, maybe we should have a women's program. Maybe we need a girls' high school team with our boys' high school team. Maybe the daughters and the sisters and the girlfriends and the cousins want to play rugby too. And that's been something, I think back in the early 2010s with the camp model, we had a lot of other folks around the country doing camps that were just for men and just for boys. Yeah. And I'm like, why would you, from a business standpoint, I'm like, why would you do that? Like, a parent can drop off two kids and not just one, and that's two registration fees. So, we need everybody. We need all demographics, all stakeholders. There's too much experience and knowledge across everything that, we got to keep everybody involved, I think, for as long as possible until it is mainstream.
I want to end, Cartley, I should probably let you end on that very inspired and I thought incredibly accurate point, but I'm going to ask you to look ahead. Let's say 2031. I think for most people, that feels like the big moment for US rugby. I'd like you to kind of envisage what you think is realistic for the rugby in the US will look like in 7 years.
Yeah, so I think just based on like the fandom that we like have in Seattle with having, I think they were like 7 or 8 pro sports teams, with even some amateur frisbee and horse polo and all the other things underneath. Like, we have cricket coming this year. I think we're going to get the fans. You know, there's folks that, and especially from a generational standpoint, I think millennials and Gen Z and everyone younger, folks want to spend money on an experience moving forward. They don't really want things. Like, folks don't have like homes and apartments that they want to fill. They want to fill their head and their hearts with memories and emotions. And I think rugby is literally that. And will just be extremely cup filling for those who can, kind of take that step and get in. As you know, it's about getting folks there, and the sport sells itself after that. So I think if we can really promote the fact that it's a World Cup, which, American soccer has really helped us prep, I think we'd be in a really tough spot without American soccer having success over the last 20 years and existing on the men's and women's sides. Otherwise, people would be like, what's a World Cup? USA is the world kind of energy. So, I think that will be big on the fan side of things. And I think we just got to get the right people. It's going to be like a lot of, like I said, a lot of hand-to-hand combat. So like, me telling my coworkers that there's a Rugby World Cup coming and tune in. And then all the way to like, how do we get Snoop Dogg there? Right. How do we get Flava Flav to care about rugby? We got pretty close with Jason Kelsey. I'm a big Taylor Swift fan. So I was like, Jason Kelsey touched a rugby ball and he's touched Taylor Swift. So that means Taylor Swift touched a rugby ball. Excuse me, I do not know how to say his name, but the gentleman who is the Welsh player who's going to be playing for the Chiefs this year.
Lewis Samet.
Yeah. I hope that's a positive thing. I hope folks see that, like, that could be a really big jump. Like, wow, look at, like, a rugby player is actually an athlete. Like, there's a lot of Brad's dads and Chad's who are probably rooting against him. And I hope that he does really well and the Chiefs market the heck out of that. And I think too, there's another opportunity for those stadiums from a business standpoint to get filled, right? And then that's going to help NFL, that's going to help soccer. So I think if we get the community right, and then this high level, it'll eventually, everything will kind of meet in the middle, and then those stadiums will be pretty full.
Well, Carly, I think US rugby is in a very good spot if there's many more people like you with your enthusiasm and business know-how as well to make that work. So I really appreciate you coming on. If anyone wants to follow Carly, and you should, you can follow her on Twitter. I won't call it X, but you do have to make sure to call it X.
Yeah.
At McKinney and Carly. But thank you so much for your time today, Carly. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you for having me. Love the discussion, and I hope to talk to you again soon.